Category C3, short feature, future-proof, the four elements, water. The four elements with thanks to the Environmental Protection Agency. Episode 3, water.
How's your day at school?
I listen to the teacher.
And what else?
I was colouring.
What did you have for lunch?
And pasta.
Was it nice?
Yeah.
This is my son, Casper. He's 3.
Can you come here for a minute? I want to show you something. Come here.
We're in the bathroom of my house having a discussion about a discovery I just made.
What's this?
Toilet.
And what's in the toilet?
A dinosaur.
Why is there a dinosaur in the toilet?
Because that is...
Did you put a dinosaur in the toilet?
No.
Are you sure? What kind of dinosaur is it?
A little T-Rex.
And do dinosaurs go in the toilet?
No.
Why do dinosaurs not go in the toilet?
They might do a wee on the dinosaurs.
Because you might do a wee on the dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs don't go down the drain. But what does is far scarier. I decided to follow the pipes to find out more.
Road runner, road runner, going faster miles an hour. Gonna drive past the Stop and Shop with the radio on. I'm in love with the modern world.
Massachusetts. You must be David. How's it going?
Pleased to meet you, Jonathan.
It may surprise you to learn that our sewer system is almost entirely dependent on that pure Newtonian force, gravity. The wastewater from your house goes down internal plumbing and out to the street, where it mixes with the storm drain and travels for miles in the sewers under the city.
Are you ready for the smell?
Oh dear. Yeah, go on then.
This is David Green from Dublin City Council Drainage Division. He's giving me a history of the sewers.
Wow.
Now, Jonathan, you're going back in time here. You're going back into London Bridge, Siphon House as they call it. Across the River Dodder is another name for the Siphon House. They call it the Morgue. The reason being is because they reckon in the early days of the century, some of our shift attendants used to help the coroner maybe stitch up patients.
So we're in sort of quite an old building, what, 20 yards across, maybe 8 yards wide. Old bricks and then just a series of metal grills and the smell.
That's it, Jonathan. The smell, it's a journey of smells that comes from all parts of Dublin.
Lovely. The sewer system was a serious feat of engineering in the 19th century, connecting all of Dublin's houses to a main sewer using nothing but downhill to keep things moving. The only problem was the occasional overflow and what to do with the waste when you got to the end of the road.
Down here, this is obviously fresh human waste.
Yeah.
By the looks of it.
That's right.
The smell is pretty gross. So, when these sewers were built, where did all of the waste go originally?
They had a ship called the Shamrock, and it was built to serve that purpose in Dublin. And the ship.
Hang on, you're saying the waste that came from our sewers went onto a ship?
Onto a ship. Yeah, it went down to where we know it today, the Pigeon House Road at the Outfall Works, and it went into different tanks. And there was lads that would actually get into the tanks with sweeping brushes, and it would sweep all the stuff into a corridor so it would go onto the ship. And the ship would have to wait to a tide and empty all its cargo out towards Holt.
Oh dear.
And that was going on through the First World War, the Second World War, all the way through up to the 80s when we had joined the EEC in the early 70s.
Until the 80s, we were putting all of Dublin's excrement on a boat and sticking it in Howth Harbour.
Yeah, nowadays we recycle that waste. It's no longer permitted to dump at sea out towards Howth.
As horrific as that sounds for people living in Howth, it served us relatively well for decades. But now, these busy modern sewers flowing underneath busy modern cities transport more than just waste.
I can see prophylactics is probably the best way to call them, bottles, toys, quite large items as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you have a lot of items, as I say, Jonathan, that washes down into our systems. But really, what people should only flush from the toilet is really what goes into the toilet paper and waste, excrement or fowl. That's really all that should go in to a toilet bowl.
David's right, but dolls, condoms and sanitary towels are just a nuisance. The real danger comes from something so tiny we can't even see it. In our rivers, sewers, and even beyond our treatment plants, invisible organisms have been breeding, changing, and evolving to become the biggest threat to modern medicine today.
I'm going to tell you a story.
Hi, how are you? Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. How are you?
Very good. Very foggy today.
Incredibly foggy.
Dervla Morris is an environmental researcher at NUI Galway.
So this is the River Carrib.
Yes, very picturesque, even under the fog.
It looks like the backdrop for a horror movie with all this fog over the lake, or like one of those cheesy, you know, 25 love song double CDs you buy online. You know, the couple kind of hand in hand walking along the riverside. I don't know how this bodes for the next 10 minutes, Dervla.
Having suitably weirded Dervla out, I asked her about her research. She's looking at something else we've been flushing, often without realising it, antibiotics.
So when you take an antibiotic, you're releasing some of the antibiotic and also the antibiotic-resistant bacteria, if they happen to be living in your gut, into the environment.
Dervla's been looking at just how much antibiotic residue is in Irish waters and the effect it's been having on bacteria.
Our research focuses on bacteria of public health importance, and we focus particularly on the bacteria that lives in your gut. So it's very pertinent to things that go down the toilet. So what we've looked at is various different waters and effluents for antibiotic resistant bacteria and also for antibiotic residues themselves.
As you know, antibiotics are pretty much our only weapon in the fight against bacterial infections. They usually work in one of a few ways. By stopping the bacteria's ability to make what it needs to grow new cells. Interfering with the bacteria's ability to repair its damaged DNA. Or by weakening the bacteria's cell wall until it bursts. We use antibiotics intensively on humans and animals, and this dependence is finally catching up on us.
Yes, because since the introduction of antibiotics into human and veterinary medicine, we've been using them a lot. And the more you use antibiotics, the more you're exerting a selective pressure on bacteria to have to change in some way so they can survive in the presence of these antibiotics. The bacteria change their DNA or swap their DNA with each other so that they give each other a selective advantage so that they can survive and ultimately become resistant to these antibiotics.
It's a myth that we become resistant to antibiotics because we become immune to them. It's actually evolution at work in our bodies. As bacteria grow and multiply, they are constantly mutating. When they come into contact with an antibiotic, some of those bacteria might have changed in their structure just enough to survive the attack. These few successful bacteria live on, multiply, and then flourish. Pretty soon, you've got yourself a strain of bacteria that's potentially untreatable.
If all the bacteria in our bodies become resistant to antibiotics, what happens then?
Okay, we certainly hope that won't happen, and but if that did happen, we would go back to the pre-antibiotic era before Alexander Fleming discovered penicillin.
That's not a good time for health, really, is it?
No, certainly not. It would mean that people would be dying from very simple infections, that a lot of the surgeries and other medical interventions that are necessary to prolong life couldn't be performed safely because of the risk of infection.
The list of procedures that depend on antibiotics is endless. Cancer treatments, transplants, pneumonia care would all be impossible without them. And something as simple as a strep throat or a bad scratch could potentially kill if left untreated. So it would be very worrying for Dervla to have found resistant bacteria almost everywhere she looked. But that's exactly what happened.
Yes, that's correct. And that's possibly not surprising for the older antibiotics because they're naturally produced. So there would be resistant bacteria present in nature. So it's possibly not unusual to find bacteria resistant to the older antibiotics everywhere. What was concerning was that we found bacteria resistant to the newer antibiotics. And in particular, we found extended spectrum beta-lactamase producing E. coli in the source of a group water supply and also in the effluent emitting from a wastewater treatment plant.
So in the water that we drink as well as the water that's gone through the final stages of treatment?
Yes. Now, not in the case of the group water supply, the treated water was clear. There was no E. coli present in the treated water because the treatment processes were effective at killing the organism. But we did find it in the source water. So if treatment failed in that instance, that antibiotic-resistant bacteria would have ended up in the treated water.
So you're finding newer antibiotics in the waters around cities. Presumably, if there's enough of that, we're going to see more resistant to those antibiotics.
Again, if yes, because the more you expose bacteria to an antibiotic, the more chance there is for resistance to develop.
It seems counterintuitive, but by having a lot of antibiotics in our environment, we're encouraging the growth of the things they're supposed to be killing. We can buy ourselves some time by limiting the amount of antibiotics we prescribe through prevention, yes, washing those hands, and through vaccination. But as it stands, we are now on the edge of a crumbling cliff. And only time will tell if antibiotics follow the same path as the dinosaurs into extinction.
The Four Elements was funded by the Environmental Protection Agency's research programme, using knowledge to protect and improve our natural environment and human health. News Talk 106 to 108.